58, a motion of the commission to consider the application of Conoco for an order authorizing emergency and/or intermittent gas flaring from four wells at a central facility for the wells in the Dickinson Lodge Pool, Stark County, North Dakota, as an exception to the provisions of 380806.4 of the North Dakota Century Code. All parties wishing to be heard in this case, please come forward.
May it please Examiner Lawrence Fender, P.O. Box 400, Bismarck, North Dakota, appearing in this matter, case number 5858, on behalf of Conoco Inc. We'll have one witness who is ready to be sworn at this time.
Could you raise your right hand, please? Do you promise to tell the truth in this proceeding?
Yes. Examiner, before we begin, this is an application at the request of Conoco Inc. to authorize intermittent or emergency flaring from wells that are producing in the Dickinson Lodge Pool. Just some brief background. There are currently four producing wells in the Dickinson Lodge Pool. Three are currently connected to a gas gathering facility. One, the state aid number 83, is producing at very low volumes, and the gas from that is being flared. There may be some argument that we don't even have to be here to get an exemption from the requirements of 380806.4, but we believe that the statute is somewhat ambiguous, and in the abundance of caution, we're here to get the exemption for that limited amount of flaring that may take place on an intermittent basis or an emergency basis. With that in mind, my first witness is Mr. Paul Schultz. Would you state your name for the record, please, Paul?
My name is Paul Schultz, S-C-H-U-L-Z.
By whom are you employed and in what capacity?
I'm employed by Conoco Inc. as a senior conservation advisor in its Casper Division office.
And in that capacity, excuse me, you're also a engineer by education and training, is that correct?
Correct.
And in that capacity, you've had an opportunity to testify before the North Dakota Industrial Commission on previous occasions?
Yes.
And you've had your qualifications accepted as that of an expert?
Yes.
And in preparation for today's hearing, have you made a thorough study and review of all the pertinent matters concerning this application flaring in the Dickinson Lodge Pool?
Yes.
And have you prepared, or had prepared under your control and supervision, certain exhibits that you intend to sponsor?
Yes.
Have you satisfied yourself as to the accuracy of those exhibits?
Yes.
I'll offer the further testimony of this witness as that of an expert.
Motion granted.
Paul, let's turn first to what's been marked as Exhibit 1. Can you identify that exhibit and then briefly highlight for the examiner the more important aspects of it?
Exhibit number 1 is a plat of the Dickinson Lodge Pool field showing the wells drilled in that field. And also indicated on the plat is the working interest ownership for each of the active wells. The first well that was drilled in the field was the State 74 well that's located in the west half of Section 32. That well was completed, I believe, in February of '93. The second well that was drilled in the pool is the Catermas 75 well, which is located in the south half of Section 31. Third well would be the Frenzel 79 well, located in the north half of Section 31. Following that, a dry hole for the lodge pole, the Philippine number 76, was drilled in the east half of Section 32. Another producer, the State A number 83, was drilled in the north half of Section 5. And then finally, the Walton number 84 well is currently drilling, and that's located in the north half of Section 6.
And which of the wells that you've just discussed that are currently producing are connected to a gas gathering facility?
The State number 74, the Catermas number 75, and the Frenzel number 79.
And why is the State A number 83 currently not connected to a gas gathering facility?
Although it's not depicted on this map, I believe I-94 is located between the State A 83 and the remaining wells. The decision was made because of the low productive rates from the well to not bore under the highway and place the gas sales line until such time as the status of the Walton number 84 was determined, because that will help give the facility engineer a better idea of where that boring should actually occur. However, it is Conoco's intention at some point during this year to connect State A number 83 to the gas sales system.
Now, you indicated that the State 74, the Frenzel, and the Catermas well are currently connected to a gas gathering facility. The purpose of this application is not to disconnect and begin flaring gas, is it?
No.
What is the purpose?
Instead, what the purpose of this hearing is that Conoco would like a waiver from the requirement to pay taxes and royalties on the small volumes of gas that may be flared intermittently as a result of systemic problems in either the gas sales system itself or a subsection of that, the vapor recovery system located at the oil storage tanks. So we're not seeking a waiver from the limits that have been set forth in NDIC order number 6607 in regards to flaring restrictions.
Paul, can you briefly describe for the examiner the, you know, the gas systems operations out there so we can get a better handle on why Conoco believes this application is necessary to get the exemption?
Okay. By way, excuse me, please. By way of background, the Dickinson Lodgepole crude has a gas oil ratio of approximately 530 SCF per stock tank barrel. This gas is contained in solution in the reservoir crude. When the oil is brought to the surface, the gas is separated from the crude at two distinct locations. First, when after it moves from the wellhead, it passes through a treating vessel. This treating vessel lowers the pressure of the crude to approximately 60 psi. At that point, approximately 466 standard cubic feet of gas per barrel of oil are liberated from the crude, and then this gas is then transferred into the gas sales line. Following this stage, the crude is then shipped from this treating vessel into the oil storage tank. At that point, the pressure drop in this flow system goes from approximately 60 psi to atmospheric. This pressure drop releases the remaining 64 standard cubic feet of gas that is still contained in the crude in solution. Now, at the crude storage tank, we have sort of a collection system, this vapor recovery unit, that gathers this gas up, compresses it to approximately 50 psi, and then ships this gas back into the gas sales system.
Now, what kind of problems does Conoco anticipate having with the gas gathering facility to require this application?
Okay. Well, the problems can occur at several points. It is possible, for example, that freeze-ups can actually occur in the gas sales line. This would cause a blockage in the line, and we simply wouldn't be able to sell gas. We wouldn't be able to move gas out of the field into the gas sales system. Based on discussions that our facility engineer, Steve Cathy, has held with the field personnel, they do anticipate that such freeze-ups could occur approximately once to twice a year, and the duration of these freeze-ups could be anywhere from 2 hours to 48 hours. Additionally, in the gas sales system itself, it's possible that there could be operational problems downstream at the transmission station, and they too could force the shut-in of the gas sales system.
What types of problems is Conoco anticipating with respect to the vapor recovery system that would require gas flaring on an intermittent or emergency basis?
Once again, the vapor recovery system is, you know, a compressor. It's a mechanical system. We do anticipate that it'll be functional at least 95% of the time. However, the VRU will have to be down for periodic maintenance. Additionally, there can be any sort of failure in there. A seal can fail, the entire compressor can go down, there can be all sorts of mechanical problems that can occur with the system. And if that happens, once again, we wouldn't be able to capture the gas from the oil storage tanks at that point. We'd have no way to gather it, compress it, and introduce it back into the sales line.
Okay. Well, let's go on to the next exhibit then, Paul, exhibit number two. Can you identify that exhibit and briefly discuss the more important aspects of it?
Okay. Exhibit number two is summary data of some of the economic aspects of the oil and gas production and the possible gas flaring that might occur for the Dickinson Lodgepole pool. As I stated in, under Roman numeral number one, the assumptions I'm using, once again, that the treating vessel gas oil ratio, in a sense the gas that I'd be recovering at this treating vessel, the first stage of the gas separation, would be approximately 466 SCF per stock tank barrel of oil. The gas I would recover from the vapor recovery unit would be about 64 SCF of gas per stock tank barrel. That the value of the oil would be assumed to be $11.65, which I believe is the December 1993 Williston Sweet posting. The gas price would be about $1 an MCF. Now, I will admit that is an estimated gas price. There are contractual situations out there that are really complicated that preclude me from giving you a specific gas price. that the average oil production tax burden would be 5% under what I'm calling the curtailed rate, and I'll explain that in a minute, or 7% under what I'm calling the unitization rate, and that the tax burden on the gas would be 4.07 cents an MCF. Now, under Roman numeral number 2, I've got a table that I've called daily production summary, and that lists the various oil and gas production volumes under two different scenarios. The first scenario is what I've called the curtailed rate. That's the system or scenario we're presently under. Essentially, at this time, Dickinson Lodgepole production has been curtailed to an average of 300 barrels a day throughout the field. So at that point, our oil volume that we'd be producing from the field would be 300 barrels a day. The gas volume recovered from the treating vessel would be approximately 140 MCF a day, and the gas volume recovered from the vapor recovery unit would be approximately 19 MCF a day. The second rate, the unitization rate, is what we're hoping to reach at some time in the next year or so. As I think the commission is aware, Conoco is presently engaged in the process of unitizing the Lodgepole pool. At that point, once unitization has been completed, we anticipate increasing the production rate from the pool, and 3,500 barrels of oil represents roughly an average production rate during the unitization period.
Paul, when you talk about curtailed rate and unitization rate, you're really talking about a curtailed rate versus an unrestricted rate, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go on then.
Okay. Now at the, the unitization or unrestricted rate of 3,500 barrels of oil per day, the gas volume recovered from the treating vessel would be approximately 1,631 MCF a day, and the gas volume recovered from the vapor recovery unit would be approximately 224 MCF a day. Now the table below that on the daily revenue summary simply displays what the estimated value, and that's gross value, of both the oil and gas production from the Lodgepole pool would be under the two scenarios. And for example, looking at the what I've called once again the unitization scenario, the 3,500 barrels of oil per day rate, at current prices, the daily oil revenues would be approximately $40,775. The revenues from the gas recovered at the treating vessel would be approximately $1,631. And the revenues realized from the vapor recovery unit gas would be approximately $224, for total gross revenues of approximately $42,600. Okay. And the final table, which I've labeled Roman numeral number 4, would be essentially a daily tax burden summary, which indicates what taxes are realized from the Lodgepole pool under the various production rates. Once again, looking at the unitization rate, say of 3,500 barrels of oil per day, the daily oil tax rate we would assume would be realized would be approximately $2,850. The taxes realized from the gases recovered at the treating vessel would be about $66, and the taxes realized from the gas recovered by the vapor recovery unit would be approximately $9.
So basically table 4 is telling us that for every day you would shut in the well because of a malfunction in the vapor recovery unit or a malfunction in the gas gathering facility, you'd be looking at a loss under the unrestricted rate to the state of North Dakota of approximately $3,000.
For a complete shut-in, yes.
Has Conoco given any consideration into installing some additional equipment that if there was a malfunction in the pipeline, if there was a malfunction in the vapor recovery unit, that would allow these wells to produce but so that you didn't have to flare the gas?
What we've looked at is the possibility of automating the system such that all the wells would be shut down at any time that a flaring situation occurred. The actual cost for the equipment is at least $4,000. However, one operational problem that would be realized is once a shutdown has occurred, it would take a minimum of at least 1 hour per well to restore productivity. So, for example, if we were operating under a three producer scenario, it would take, and there was a transient phenomenon that caused an accidental shutdown, that there isn't a true flaring situation, but the system was triggered and it shut down anyway, we'd be looking at a minimum of at least 3 hours to restart the field.
So in essence, it is economically infeasible to install the appropriate equipment so that you could totally prevent any intermittent or emergency flaring?
Yes.
I don't have any other questions for Paul. We would offer exhibits 1 and 2.
Accept the exhibits into the record. Are there any questions from the staff?
To put things in the proper perspective, Paul, the 83 well has a year exemption from 3808.06.4, so that really isn't pertinent at this time. So we're only talking about gas to be emergency flared at the 74 site. And according to your testimony, you were talking a couple days, a year on the main system, and then the other smaller volume system is considerably less. We're only talking about an anticipated 1% of the gas volume that you're going to get an exemption from 3808.06.4.
That's
correct. So to put it in proper perspective, we're talking about a very small percentage of the total gas production.
Yes.
That could be emergency flaring.
Mm-hmm.
Now the second thing, the on Exhibit 2, the oil price, the $11.65, is that Conoco's posting or is that Amoco's Williston Basin posting?
I don't know. It was given to me by the analyst as the most recent oil price that they had posted in the area.
Okay. That is not the price you get for that crude, though, is it?
No, I believe, I can be wrong, but I believe that may be the price. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything further from the staff?
Paul, how long do you plan on, you may have covered it, I didn't hear you, but when do you plan on unitizing and being able to produce, say, your 3,500 barrel oil per day?
Yesterday would be nice, but we're working very hard and we're hopeful that unitization will be achieved this year.
And when would your increase in production occur? Would it be at the start of unitization or after X number of...
I can't say for sure.
Exactly.
I can't say for sure because, to be honest, we have not resolved yet what the specific recovery mechanism is going to be. We're looking at possibly gas injection or possibly water injection, and that may have some impact on what the production scenario is going to be, because nothing else that'll tell us how long it's going to be before we can install the facilities.
Okay, thank you.
Anything further? Okay, we'll close the hearing.